Most stories of family betrayal end in silence. This one ended in court. When 17-year-old Marissa found out her mother had been cheating on her stepfather for years, she didn't cry. She plotted, and her plan was worse than revenge. It was seductive, cold-blooded manipulation. She seduced her own stepfather, not because she wanted him, but because she knew her mother loved control more than love. And when Marissa found out she was pregnant, the secret tore through the family like wildfire. But here's the twist no one saw coming. He wanted the baby. And not just that, he wanted custody. Now a courtroom is the battlefield, and her stepfather is painting himself as the victim. Of an underage seductress, her mother calls her a traitor. The tabloids call her a monster. But what no one asks is why Marissa did it in the first place and what she plans to do next. This is not just a story of forbidden sex. It's a story about control, narcissism, and the ultimate betrayal that shattered three lives forever. So if you think you've heard it all, you haven't. Hit follow on your favourite platform and leave us a comment, because the next story might just change the way you see everything. Don't miss a single twisted turn. Chapter 1. A Game. She never meant to win. Marissa never believed in love. Not the kind she saw on TV. Not the kind her mother pretended to have. Not even the fleeting kind you catch glimpses of between strangers holding hands at the park. For Marissa, love was leverage, a currency, something to be weaponized. She learned that from her mother. Her mother, Denise Caldwell, was a perfectly groomed hurricane. Every hair in place, every smile preloaded with sugar-coated poison. A corporate communications executive by day and a social vampire by night. She didn't have friends, she had assets. And for the last 8 years, her prime asset was David Caldwell. Husband number three, Marissa's stepfather. At first, David seemed like the calm after the storm. He brought home flowers and apologised for things that weren't even his fault. He asked Marissa how school was. He remembered her dog's name. He even noticed when she dyed the tips of her hair pink that summer, something her own mother missed for weeks. But the honeymoon phase wasn't built to last. Denise didn't do soft, and David didn't do disobedience. Marissa watched their marriage rot from the inside out. Her mother humiliated him in public, flirted with younger men at cocktail parties, and drank gin like it was water. And David, he just smiled, quietly, obediently, while his eyes got a little more vacant each month. Marissa wasn't angry at first, just observant, detached, until she found her mother's burner phone. It was a rainy Tuesday afternoon. Denise had left it under the car seat by mistake. Marissa was searching for her AirPods. She found text messages instead. "You're the only one who makes me feel alive. I hate pretending he still matters. Next weekend. Same hotel. Room 418. Dozens of messages. Some with photos. Some with voice notes that made Marissa's skin crawl. Her mother had been cheating for years. Not just with one man. Several. Some married. One, a former boss. Marissa sat in the garage, shivering from the cold, phone in hand, reading it all. Something inside her broke that night, but not like glass. More like ice cracking, controlled, inevitable. She didn't cry, she didn't confront, she planned. The plan was simple. Take the one thing her mother still thought she owned. David, she started small. Eye contact that lingered a second too long, calling him Dave instead of Dad. Walking around the house in a towel a little too often, bending over in short shorts while looking for something under the kitchen sink. At first, he resisted. She could see it. The tension in his jaw, the way he avoided eye contact, the stammer when she asked for help with things she didn't need help with. But over time, the lines blurred. A hand brushed her hip once, a second too long on her back during a hug. The sigh he gave when she leaned too close during movie night. He was cracking. By Thanksgiving, she made her move. Denise was out at a spa weekend with her latest client, one of the affair partners Marissa had seen in the texts. The house was quiet. Marissa cooked dinner just for David. Steak. Wine. A soft playlist of jazz in the background. She wore a silk robe and nothing underneath. He tried to protest. He really did. But David was a man already broken. What started as an uncomfortable silence over dinner ended in the guest. Bedroom, Marissa's bedroom, she took control. She made him feel wanted. She told him all the things her mother never said. He didn't resist this time, not fully. And after, he cried. Marissa didn't. She just lay there staring at the ceiling, wondering if she'd finally won. The affair didn't end there. It became ritualistic. Whenever Denise was away, in the shower, on conference calls, once, even in the walk-in closet, while Denise took a phone call in the hallway. Marissa kept it going, not because she was in love, but because she needed her mother to lose. She wanted her mother to hurt. But then she missed her period. Twice. She sat on the toilet, hands trembling, three pregnancy tests lined up like little judges. All three glowed with the same word, pregnant. Her stomach dropped, but her face stayed frozen. She didn't cry. She didn't scream. She took a photo of the tests and texted it to David. Him. Is it mine? Her. It's not like I've been sleeping around. You know that. He didn't reply for hours. When he finally did, it wasn't what she expected. We'll figure it out. I want to do right by the baby. Maybe we should talk to a lawyer. A lawyer? That's when the shift began. What started as seduction turned into surveillance. David began taking notes, keeping receipts, asking questions like, are you eating enough? And have you told anyone else? He bought prenatal vitamins, installed a camera at the front door, asked if she'd consider moving into the guest house for privacy. Marissa realized she'd unleashed something she couldn't control. She wasn't the hunter anymore. She was the hunted. Denise found out in the most brutal way possible. She walked in on them. It was a Sunday afternoon. Marissa had just come back from her first OB appointment. She hadn't told her mother yet. She didn't plan to, for at least another month. But David had texted her to come talk, said he wanted to discuss the future. Denise had forgotten her briefcase and came home early. There they were, David sitting across from Marissa at the dining table, sonogram in hand. What the fuck is this? Denise's voice was ice and thunder all at once, her eyes locked on the ultrasound, then on Marissa, then on David. Marissa braced for violence, but Denise didn't scream, didn't cry. She laughed, a long, cold, maniacal laugh that rang through the house. You think you've won? You think you can destroy me like this? David stood up. Denise, we need to talk. She cut him off. Don't you dare. Then she turned to Marissa. You're pregnant with your stepfather's baby. You disgusting little whore. You've ruined your life. And you think he's going to save you. You're not the first girl he's ruined. Marissa blinked. What? Denise smiled. Oh, you didn't know. Ask him about Amanda. Ask him about what really happened before he met me. You stupid, naive girl. David's face turned white. Marissa stared at him. Who's Amanda? He didn't answer. The next week was a hurricane. Lawyers were called. Denise filed for divorce the same day she issued a restraining order on David, claiming he was a predator who groomed her daughter. She called the press. Leaked photos. Tabloids ate it up. But David fought back. He filed for custody, claiming Marissa seduced him, that she was of legal age, and that he was the only one fit to care for the unborn child. Marissa was now the centrepiece of a legal war. She wasn't a daughter. She wasn't a victim. She wasn't even a pregnant teenager anymore. She was evidence. Chapter 2, Custody, Cameras, and the Court of Public Opinion. There were three different versions of Marissa Caldwell now, and none of them belonged to her. In the tabloids, she was a teenage temptress who destroyed her own family with a single calculated pregnancy. On social media, she was either a free Marissa survivor or a home-wrecking psychopath, trending under the hashtag stepdaddy scandal. In court, she was the minor petitioner carrying the child of the respondent, spoken about in passive voice, like a bruised exhibit. But in her mind, she was still the girl who wanted her mother to hurt. She just hadn't meant for it to turn into this. The courtroom smelled like floor wax and stale coffee. The judge, a grey-bearded man with drooping jowls and watery eyes, sat like a monument behind the bench. Cameras weren't allowed inside, but outside, a circus, protesters, paparazzi, interview vans, even a girl dressed in a fake baby bump holding a sign that read, "She knew what she was doing." David sat across the aisle from her, clean-shaven, in a navy suit, eyes soft and hands clasped like a model of fatherly virtue. He even had a lawyer from a non-profit group for Father's Rights. It was PR gold. Marissa could already imagine the headlines. Teen seductress traps kind stepdad in pregnancy scandal. Now he just wants his child. Denise hadn't spoken to Marissa in weeks. She sat with her own legal team, dressed like a grieving widow in all black, lips tight, eyes cold. The first blow came early. David's lawyer filed for joint custody of the unborn child, citing his intent to provide financial support, stable housing and a safe moral environment, which apparently didn't include Marissa's home with her narcissistic, adulterous mother. Marissa stared at the paperwork in disbelief. Joint custody? Of a baby that hasn't even been born, that she would be raising. She turned to her own lawyer, a weary, underpaid public defender named Karen. "He's trying to take my baby," Marissa whispered. Karen sighed. "Technically, he's trying to take part of your baby, which, legally speaking, he can do if he proves paternity and unfit conditions. I'm 17. He's banking on the court treating you like an adult, because technically, the moment you turn 18, I turn 18 in 3 months. Karen nodded slowly. "Which means, if the court stalls and you deliver after your birthday, he could get 50-50. It hit Marissa like a punch to the chest. The pregnancy wasn't even halfway through, and already she was losing control. Denise took the stand first. "My daughter is mentally unstable," she said with perfect posture and zero emotion. "She's been in therapy since middle school, self-harming, bullying, manipulative behaviour. I tried to protect her, but she turned on me. I believe she seduced my husband to punish me." Marissa blinked. Her mother had just accused her of incest under oath and made herself sound like the real victim. Then came David. "I made a mistake," he said, voice low and trembling. "I was vulnerable. Denise and I hadn't been intimate in years. I felt invisible." Marissa offered comfort. "At first it felt wrong, but I didn't initiate anything. I'm ashamed, but I never coerced her. I believe I can be a better parent to this child than either Denise or Marissa." "And what about Amanda?" Marissa muttered from her seat. That name, Amanda, hung like smoke in her mind ever since Denise had dropped it like a landmine. Karen noticed. "We need to bring that up." But Amanda wasn't on the witness list, and no one, David, Denise, or the court, seemed eager to explore that particular ghost. So Marissa did what Denise had taught her. She went around the system. She found Amanda on Facebook. Amanda Reed, 31, lives in Ohio, mutual friend with David Caldwell. Marissa messaged her. "Hi, I think you knew David a long time ago. He's my stepfather. He got me pregnant. My mother said you knew what he was really like. Please, I need to know." Hours passed, then Call me. Amanda's voice on the phone was brittle, a mix of dread and relief. I was 16. He was my high school counsellor, she said. I told him about my depression. He said he could help me after hours. He kissed me the first week. I thought he loved me. Marissa's stomach turned. He told me he'd leave his wife for me. I got pregnant. He said we had to hide it. Then, one night, I told the principal. He was fired the next day. They covered it up, but he moved states. Disappeared. And the baby? Marissa asked. I lost it. Stress. Malnutrition. Doesn't matter. He was gone. Marissa recorded the whole call. When she played it for Karen, the lawyer almost choked on her coffee. This changes everything. In court the next day, they presented the recording. The judge raised an eyebrow. David's lawyer objected on the grounds of privacy laws, but Karen held firm. We're not admitting it as legal evidence. We're using it as a basis to request a character review and background check. The judge ordered a recess. The tabloids went wild. Another victim of stepfather reveals chilling past. David Caldwell's dark history exposed. David's lawyer pulled him from the media circuit, but the damage was done. Marissa's public image started to shift from seductress to survivor. Even Denise, sensing the winds changing, began to retreat. She released a public statement expressing support for her daughter's recovery. It was damage control, and Marissa knew it, but the court still hadn't ruled on custody. 2 weeks later, the judge issued the decision. Paternity confirmed, custody denied. David Caldwell was placed under investigation for misconduct involving a minor in a prior state. While charges weren't yet filed, the judge deemed him potentially dangerous and psychologically manipulative. He was ordered to stay 500 feet away from Marissa and the unborn child. Marissa sat there frozen. She'd won. But it didn't feel like victory, because the baby was still coming, because her body was still not her own, because Denise now wanted back in her life, not as a mother, but as a brand manager, talking about controlling the narrative, and because David's eyes on the way out of that courtroom weren't angry. They were loving, possessive, like he still thought the story wasn't over. Marissa gave birth in a private clinic under a pseudonym, a girl, healthy, quiet, beautiful. She named her Winter because nothing else had survived the storm. She kept the father's name off the birth certificate. She cut off her mother. She changed her number. And she stayed off the internet, except for one post. A black screen, white text. I'm not a victim. I'm not a villain. I'm a mother. And that's the only title I'll ever need. But even now, she checks the mail every week for court papers, just in case David tries again, because she knows men like him never stop wanting what they can't have, and he no longer has her. But he still wants Winter.